This is Carmen Ruiz de Clavijo, a cataloger at the National Library of Spain in Madrid, and a colleague of mine at Archivos magazine.
The main situation in the European Union about traveling between countries, it's really difficult. Actually, the 27 countries that form the European Union doesn't have common rules for everyone. Each country decided how you should come into the country or how you should leave the country. So that makes really difficult to move between us. And absolutely, if the tourist would like to come, it's even more difficult because you have to add other tests about the COVID-19, if you're coming from the States or if you're coming from Australia or if you're coming from Korea. It's really difficult to know exactly what you should do before going to the country, when you arrive, if you need to do any test or if you need to get any vaccine. You need to research on the internet to know what exactly you need to do. Actually, the European Union have done like a website where you can download an app for free in each country, and it's going to let you know what happened in the country, which ones are the figures, what you should do when you arrive. So the European Union is working in becoming all together and think about which rules should be applied. But in the meantime, each country is doing as they like. For example, Portugal and Spain, they don't have any frontiers between them, and you can travel to Portugal or they can come into Spain, and you don't need to double check anything, you don't need to prove anything, you can travel between us without any problem. But if you want to go to France, you have to do some checks, you have to test that you didn't have the COVID-19, so it makes it difficult to go to France, but it makes it easy to go to Portugal. Also, in some cities, they are doing lockdowns, like for example Madrid. We are in a lockdown. You cannot come in or come out from the city center. You have to prove that you need to, but the main issue is that the airport and the main train station of Spain is in Madrid. And if you are not allowing people to travel from this city, they're not allowing people to communicate to other countries. So it's been an issue. I think the European Union is trying to sort it out, and we will know soon which rules may apply in the future months or even the next year.
Welcome to The Developmentality, the podcast about everything. It's October 12th. 2020. Today I'm 43 years old, which puts my introduction to the world of international travel some 33 years in the rearview. It all began in 1987 when my parents moved us all from small town Missouri to Argentina, where they would serve as missionaries for the next 15 years. Since then, I have become very well versed in matters of airport transit, intercontinental flights, economy class, of course, except for one glorious, totally comp and impromptu first-class flight into Sao Paulo. Passports, visas of all shapes and sizes, and much, much more. So, you can imagine that it's with no small amount of consternation that I view the effect the coronavirus pandemic has had upon freedom of movement around the globe. My connections to Argentina are still strong, but my ability to come and go as I once did is in doubt, and it's anybody's guess for how long. My U.S. passport is, at least for the moment, no longer the master key it once appeared to be. I get to wait in line, along with everyone else. Kind of like all the people from anywhere who want to visit us. I'm joined today by my friend and fellow travel junkie, Philip Seitz, to talk about this situation. Philip is a library assistant with Minitex in Minneapolis, but his downtime activities are what land him on this episode of the podcast. Let's just say he moves around. A lot. He has been, by his count, to 25 countries around the world and has visited every province in Canada and every state in the Union. He's even broken it down to the county level. If you want to learn more about his journey, visit his blog at weekendroadie.com. That's weekendroadie with a Y.com. Or just keep listening. You just got back from a vacation, right?
Yes. Yes, I did.
You went down to the southeast?
Yes. Specifically, the Charleston down to Savannah area there.
So I've been stuck in Corvallis since the lockdowns started back in March, I guess, now. And I feel like I've kind of lost touch with what's going on. But you have actually been moving around, so I figure you will have a better view of the way things are. I mean, you've been in airplanes several times now since this started. I haven't even been near an airport.
Right. I mean, it's been more than most people I know, I guess. I've been traveling, but it's still been less for me on a typical year, but yes.
So what is it like? I've seen photographs of people in airplane seats, especially for international travel, and they've got the mask over their mouth and nose, and then they've got this helmet that looks like they're getting ready to play catcher.
You see a lot of different outfits in the airport. In fact, I saw one person the last time when we were in Atlanta transiting wearing a full body suit, like a hazmat suit with gloves, the little stocking coverings that go over your shoe, the full face shield. Now that was extreme, but I've seen it all and everything in between. But I would say actually, after you experience flying once, you get used to it again. It's not as scary as you may hear or you may think. And I would say also my experience with Delta was very orderly. Everyone was behaving, I guess, more or less. My experience with Frontier is it was a bit like the name Frontier, a bit more Wild West, a bit more a bit more frazzled. Out of all these flights I took, there was nothing came out where anyone was scared about anyone coughing or sneezing or doing anything like that. No one was, you know, misbehaving or not wearing masks. But someone was pulled off the flight because they got hit in the head with overhead luggage. So the dangers of flying are not just COVID related, I would say. You know, by and large, the experience feels surprisingly normal. Now, of course, I've only been flying domestically, so I can't speak for international, but there are a few international flights coming in and out of the U.S. as well. So that might be my next challenge, I guess, at this point.
I watched a segment on The Daily Show a few weeks ago that spoke about the value, the current value of the United States passport and how it has dropped like a rock. Mm-hmm. It used to be kind of open passage to pretty much where you wanted to go with some exceptions. And now it's almost the opposite, where people are looking for that passport in order to not let us in because we're considered a high-risk part of the world, which has kind of turned things on its head a bit because, as you know, people from other countries have to jump through, from all other countries, have to jump through any number of hoops to come here. I mean, the Canadians have closed the border, and you know that if Canadians are being mean to you, something's wrong. What do you think about that? Because you've used your U.S. passport quite a bit. I've used mine quite a bit. And I'm fairly used to just being able to wave it at immigration and not necessarily waltz right through, but at least not have to go through too much red tape. Where do you think this is going to go from here?
That's such a tricky question to piece together. And I've been thinking about this every day, really. I remember, you know, when this all started back in, say, March, when things started canceling left and right, you know, a lot of people, you know, just took the pill and said, hey, I'm, you know, we'll just do our trips next year. And I was a bit leery of that. I don't know for sure if any one could have stopped this enough to the point where we could feel like, well, next year it's going to be normal again. Even if our caseload here in the US was vastly reduced, I think you'd still be dealing with a lot of red tape as far as international travel is concerned going into next year. I'm very doubtful that people that really thought, oh, yes, we'll just be able to take our vacations next year are going to actually be able to do that, despite what a lot of people want to tell you that, it's just around the corner. If that's the message people are hearing in the political spectrum from anybody, I wouldn't believe that right away because nobody knows and there's no way to
Yeah.
tell.
And I think that moving of the goalposts is almost inertial at this point because it's not just us, as you pointed out. This is a pandemic, it's all over the world. So we often, I think, get into this mindset where we're going to limit travel to the US and we never stop to think about what happens if somebody does that to us on the other end.
For me personally, it's a tough pill to swallow. I love to travel. That's my passion. I love to, look at the calendar every year and decide, oh, where am I going to go? I have a vacation or two this year that I want to plan. Let's look at the map and get kind of creative. And that's been, my hands are tied. I can't do any of that right now. And that's been difficult personally, but I'm sure that's affected so many people. But like I say, it's the same way in other places too. And I think Europe is dealing with various challenges country to country, depending on where you are. And, if you live in Russia, if you live in Russia, you might have the same perspective as someone living in the US right now. I mean, we can't speak for everyone's perspectives here because it all doesn't get reported. We don't even know what the numbers are in most of these countries. And, you look at India has just spiked like crazy. Look at Brazil, I mean, it's just all over the place. I mean, we're one of the worst players in this game right now, but we're not necessarily alone in that. And, going forward, though, the longer this goes on, at some point, there'll be an easing up on restrictions just naturally, because I just think it just almost has to happen that way, at least with the major countries. And there'll have to be some sort of allowance with, okay, everyone's wearing masks, everyone's reporting. You'll probably have to report a test within 5 days before your flight, and there'll be a general sort of rule book to play as long as you're visiting countries that are fairly large, fairly advanced with on the medical side of things. You're not going to, say, some tiny little outpost like Tuvalu or something like that. That's obviously not going to let anyone in until this is all cleared up, which could be a decade. Nobody knows. But as we go on, I think you're going to see a loosening of restrictions, if not by next summer, by 2022, because something has to give in some sense.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people making the comparison between this situation and the way air travel was immediately following 9/11 and for the next, I don't know, 6 months to a year before the FAA regulations kicked in and all the new security procedures. But I don't know, I have a hard time accepting the analogy, I guess, because on the one hand, you have a terrorist act, and there is a small percentage that there could be a hijacker on any plane you take at any point in time. On the other hand, there's almost a 100% chance that there's going to be other passengers on a flight that you take. And since that is the threat at this point, I mean, it's not someone from another part of the world that wants to blow us up, it's the people who get on the plane with us just to take a trip. So I wonder if that's an accurate analogy. I mean, you're right. At some point, we have to get used to this and we have to regularize, or we're going to go down in flames. But I wonder if that's such a direct analogy, if it really works in this situation or not.
Oh, at that level, yes, I believe it does. And I think, I hate to just use the word fear, but people have natural, obviously it's easy to be scared about this, and I am too. As much as I've gone on a few flights this year, and there's many people that won't even consider that, even though they've flown many times before. But at the same time, you know, I've known people that have gotten COVID, and it takes me a while to even be comfortable with the idea of getting close in any, you know, even within 6 feet of them, even well after they've had it. I mean, I love to travel enough where I will take that risk. And I think that is it for a lot of people. They're weighing their risk, I guess.
You say that the travel is something you're willing to take a risk for, and it seems like you're not the only one. I've been reading article after article after article. In fact, I think I sent one to you about the Qantas flight, these flights to nowhere. People are their tickets are selling out in a matter of hours, and people are paying $800 a seat to get in a plane, sit in the plane for however many hours, circle around, get off the plane right where they started. Some places are going further than that. Apparently, in Singapore, they had some environmental backlash as far as the carbon footprint of these giant circles in the air. So rather than going on the flights, they're inviting people to sit on their planes and enjoy, as they put it, their signature dishes. And in Japan, you may have seen this, they're actually doing virtual flights, kind of like a Disneyland ride. People are sitting down, they have virtual flight attendants and everything.
Oh my.
And so when I think about that, it kind of gives me a headache because to me, an airplane is a means to an end rather than the end in itself. I get nervous on airplanes. I've had some pretty hairy experiences on airplanes. And the idea of subjecting myself to that just to make a giant curlicue in the sky and climb off right where I climbed on seems a little bit nuts.
Yeah, that's interesting you say about Qantas, and I did read that. Of course, Australia, I believe all their states are still locked down from interstate travel. So that's part of the reason Qantas needs to do something. So they can't even fly. You can't fly from Victoria to South Australia. You can't go one state over. So Qantas has to get people on their plane and fly them somewhere if that's not right back to where they came from. So I guess that's what they're doing now. And, you know, I think Canada's still, I could be wrong, but for a long time at least, Canada had all their provinces locked down so you couldn't travel from province to province. I'm surprised Air Canada is not doing the same thing. I mean, airlines have to look for, you know, ways and means to exist right now. And I've heard that, you know, we're coming up on a really difficult. There's a lot of decisions that need to be made from these airlines right now based on their routes. I'm talking to you from Minneapolis here. I know there's some regional routes that Delta is planning to sever, if not now, very soon. Like you go south to Dubuque, Iowa. I think they were pulling routes from there within the next couple of weeks. You know, so people in those markets will have to drive a little farther. To the next biggest market, you'll have people from Dubuque having to, you know, drive to, well, Minneapolis, or they'll have to go to Des Moines or, you know, something else to get their connection. And I think that'll be the first thing to go are those smaller markets.
Many of the countries that we are still allowed to visit with our US passport have a 14-day quarantine requirement. So you have 2 or 3 days flight to go to the far-flung reaches of the world. And then on top of that, you have 14 days of quarantine, at least for the foreseeable future. And after that, you have outstripped your vacation time already by a week and a half. Is it even going to be worth making the trip if you end up sitting in a hotel room, unable to see anything, unable to talk to anyone? You know, a lot of people, they do the, in fact, there have been several television shows based on layovers and what you can do during a layover. Now, you know, you can't even leave the airport.
Well, and you know, at least at the outset of this, you know, with Hawaii did the 14-day quarantine. I know Alaska was there for a while. Alaska has a whole litany of different types of rules for tests now, but there is some scaling back on the 14-day thing I've seen. But in a lot of places, yes, it still exists. And no, it's probably, I mean, basically, it's serving as a essentially a blockade in its own right, because people just don't have the time or flexibility. Unless you're looking to move or work remotely from another country, some countries have opened the door up for that, including Barbados, Estonia, and others, which is intriguing for the few people where that could actually work. And maybe it's opening a few doors for people that wouldn't have considered that before. But, you know, that's mostly going to be people that have very flexible work at home arrangements where they do not need to worry about being called into the office for any reason, and also probably don't have family that's also tied to a job that needs them physically there. That's an interesting concept. Well, shoot, I have a job I can work online. Why don't I go on the beach in Barbados and do it? You know, that's I might take that up if I had that opportunity.
So much productive work gets done on the beach in Barbados. Right?
Yes.
In 1990, at age 12, I watched the FIFA World Cup for the very first time. Since then, it has become an obsession for me, but that first time was pure magic. Because I watched it from our home in Argentina, and that year, Argentina made it to the finals on the heels of two extremely dramatic penalty shootouts, one with Yugoslavia and a second with the host nation, Italy. I remember the tension of those moments. The collectively held breath of a nation was palpable in the air around me, and the equally univocal shout of triumph when the goalie, Sergio Goycochea, El Goico, blocked the winning shots must have been heard on neighboring continents. Streets went from tumbleweeds to traffic jam in a matter of milliseconds as people burst out of their homes to celebrate. Up to that point, I had been one more junkie living in a foreign country. But in that explosive instant, everything changed. I became Argentine through and through. More to the point, I learned what it was to belong to something greater than myself. And that awareness colors my outlook to this day. These moments of international congress, fans of different nations packed together into stadiums on the other side of the world, are ambassadorial in a way none other can be. We forget we come from different places, and we live the moment together. These values entered and altered my DNA as I participated from afar in the Notte Magiche, the magical nights, of the tournament's theme song, still the best of them all, I think. In the face of the supposed inexorability of globalization, as working groups become more and more international in composition, couples meet and families mix across borders, even from opposite ends of the earth. As communications systems allow us to connect and form intimate relationships with people we may never meet in person, COVID is providing a convenient, apparently indisputable reason to slam those borders shut again. And I wonder, to what extent will xenophobia manage to masquerade as health measure? Whatever your attitude toward the globalizing impulse, there is good in it that we stand to lose if we don't watch our step moving forward. One last question that I wanted to throw out, and this is something that really interests me because, as you know, I have connections, fairly close connections, with a country other than the U.S. So ongoing relations between everyone in the world, basically, is something that really concerns me. We have enough trouble as it is breaking down the barriers between countries. I mean, we've seen it in the Syrian refugee issue where people in this country were fighting over whether to let them in or not. Countries like France had to decide whether to keep letting them in even after some of them blew some of them up. And now on top of that, we have a disease that, as you pointed out, in many cases, people are asymptomatic, so you don't see them coming. It's not like Ebola, where they're bleeding from sores or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, where do we go from here? Because a lot of the things that you heard during that initial lockdown were extremely romantic and extremely sentimental. I participated in something like that myself with
the members of another magazine I work with, we each read a verse of a poem that talks about how after this is over, the next person you see on the street, be they friend or foe, are going to get a big hug from you, and you're going to thank God for the fact that you have people you can relate to. So on the one hand, you have that kind of utopian, once this is over, we will all have learned a big lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also tend to react badly to the unknown, and as you said, to fear things we can't see. And this is the quintessential example of something that can be feared and that can't be seen.
Yes.
So on the other hand, you have the perspective that this may cause walls to go up further. It may break down relationships even more between countries, not just because at the moment we can't go, but even once we can, you know, I'm seeing article after article talking about the impact on U.S. tourism, broken down as far as the percentage of tourists that are Chinese, which, considering that that is where the virus originated, I suppose it makes sense, but it's also disturbing because you're beginning to see different people around the world through the lens of COVID and only that. Uh-huh. So you have those two perspectives. On the one hand, you have this, oh, we're all going to get along, pie in the sky when this is all over. And then on the other hand, you have the more realist and I think more historically supported idea that this is actually going to make us more afraid of each other. It's going to keep us farther apart. And I wonder how you feel about that.
I don't know if my outlook is completely negative, but I would say my feeling is, and I mentioned it earlier, I feel this will go longer than we think it will. And as long as it continues to be stirred up by the politics, by the news cycle, it's going to be harder to break down those walls. And I see it between the Canada and the U.S. And I hear about it personally. I know people that live near the Canadian border. I know Canadians. I know people that live in Canada. I know the tension has been heightened considerably between people that would usually be very friendly with each other. You see it online. You see it online everywhere. There's so much mudslinging online. Like I said before, I used to go on the Reddit travel board and read about people's travels and get inspired. And now you just see a lot of mudslinging on there from people in different countries. Don't come here. If you're American, definitely don't come here. You know, and I just think it's time for leadership to accept that this is going to go on a while. There's no quick fix here. I think it behooves leadership, the major powers out there, at least, to guide us here a little bit with a scaling back of restrictions while coming up with a rule book here, sort of a playbook here. We might have to find a way. I mean, let's say this goes on and we're still in the same boat 5 years from now. I mean, we can't just do this. You know, we can't just say, well, no one can, we're all closing our borders for 5 years. That just doesn't work. It's just going to be a mess. I know from the U.S.-Canada blockade, you know, splitting families apart for who knows how long, this isn't going to work. People just get angry, and they're getting angrier and angrier and angrier. You know, there needs to be a playbook. I see situations that just make no sense. There's exclaves and enclaves of the U.S., like Point Roberts, Washington, where the kids basically had to decide. They're cut off from the rest of Washington State. They're just up there on the northwestern tip. They're connected only to Vancouver, basically. And they had to decide that, well, we have to either leave our family from Point Roberts and go to school in the fall by ourselves living in Canada, or we have to basically do school online and cut out any extracurricular activities, including sports. It's just kind of insane to me after a while that there's, first of all, been no easing up on any situation involving, you know, at least border towns and families that have been split by just a border. They used to live 5 minutes apart, but now because they live on each side of the border, they can't even see each other.
One of the first trips that you took after I met you was to the World Cup in Russia in 2018.
Yes.
And the pictures that you took and the presentation that you gave when you came back spoke of a fairly collegial encounter with people from various parts of the world. And both you and I know, being fans of the World Cup, that tends to be a moment in time when a lot of the national divisions go down, and people enjoy together the spectacle of what's going on, whether you like vuvuzelas or not. You know, that sticks in our memory as kind of a warm and fuzzy thing. We may have hated it in the moment, but I remember them with fondness now. Do you think that that sort of thing, or let me put it this way, how far out do you think that sort of encounter is at this point?
You know, I had tickets to go to the Euro this year, which was going to be hosted in, I think, 13 different countries this year. And so I'd obviously got canceled, and they've scheduled it for next year. Do I think I'm going out to Europe next year? I highly doubt it. I haven't closed the book on it, but I highly doubt it. I think they will probably hold a Euro next year, but I don't know what it will look like. And I don't know for sure if it'll actually be hosted in 13 countries. They might scale it back down to one or two to try to create a more bubble setting like we've seen in a lot of these sports. Of course, the next World Cup is going to be in Qatar in December of 2022, so it's a little ways away.
I guess what I'm getting at is the kind of party atmosphere that...
Yes.
Because, you know, the more we close borders and the more we seal ourselves off from the rest of the world, the harder it gets to consider ourselves part of a global community, which, given all of the argumentation you hear about the inexorability of globalization, that's what I like about those moments, is that you kind of forget that people aren't all just one big happy planet.
Yeah,
I mean, you even have countries like the Soviet Union in 1990 and North Korea in 2010. These things were countries that we don't ever see come out and play.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because you bring up my trip to Russia. I remember when I was in Kaliningrad, stepping foot on the streets of Kaliningrad was just so otherworldly to me. But that's travel in general, and I love that feeling. But when I got through the gates a day or two later to the game, I hadn't felt so much unbridled joy in my life in so many years. I mean, it was just incredible to be there at the gathering place of all these countries. And I at the time, I called my sister, and she answered the phone, and I said, I made it. You know, it was just so exciting. And it's that feeling and just that rejoicing as a global community instead of, you know, nitpicking, fighting, criticizing, what have you. It's just, you know, just pure enjoyment and celebration. It just can't happen by default, I feel. You can't stir those same emotions with no fans in the stands. Even if you're not planning on being there, it's hard to watch a game and get that excited about it when you see nobody cheering. It's like, what are we watching?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually had not thought of that, so thank you for putting that on my plate.
Yeah, it's just, it's difficult to feel it with the same passion. You just feel you're watching a glorified exhibition here or a scrimmage, at least in my mind, and I think a lot of people feel that way.
When all is said and done, the situation leaves me highly conflicted. On the one hand, I think it's about time we got a taste of our own medicine. For years, we've made people beg to set foot in the United States. We forced families apart for months and years at a time while we slowly unspool our red tape. And after draining their resources in an honest effort to become part of our society, still, we turn many of them away. And then wax poetic during election cycles about the broken immigration system. The system, all evidence suggests, we have no intention of fixing. With the shoe on the other foot, at least temporarily, perhaps we'll be able to shed a bit of our hubris long enough to arrive at a more objective appreciation of our place in the world. Perhaps. But I'm not holding my breath. On the other hand, I know firsthand the joys inherent in contact with other cultures, and the prospect of losing the ability to build and cross those bridges leaves me in tatters. My life wouldn't be half as rich as it is today were it not for the opportunities I've had to make those connections. I expect Philip would say the same.
So let's hope we move quickly to the playbook Philip mentioned, so my kids and yours and everybody else's don't miss out on the privileges we've enjoyed. We have got to open the world to one another again, in a way that is both cognizant of the risks and open to the possibilities of belonging to a global community. At this point, we're faced with a decision. We can allow this virus to drive us apart, or we can find a way to turn curse into blessing, to recognize the bond COVID creates between us on a genetic level. The very nature of a pandemic is that it's happening to us all. If there is clearer evidence out there that we're all part of one endless extended family, I do not know what it might be. We, the inheritors of the postmodern ethos, have been dumped headfirst into the greatest meta-narrative of them all. As a great man once said, no one is an island. And right now, that bell that tolls for us all is tolling like hell. The Develop Mentality is an Anchor podcast, written and produced by me, Vance Woods. Music for this episode by Scott Holmes. Guest appearance by Carmen Ruiz de Clavijo. Thank you for listening. Please join us next time.